fire.
You'd be surprised.
People are looking down.
Yeah.
Renzana Luban taught in an elementary school in America, and he always tried. Every idea that he taught, it's a great example for all educators. Everything that he taught, he tried to make very practical for the students that he was teaching. There's a Masechta towards the end of Shas. It's called Erechin. That's the Mishnayos that they were learning, and it's halachos about when there was a Beis Hamikdash, and people wanted to donate certain values, so they were able to say, I wanted to donate the value of X, or I wanted to donate the value of Y, and it was always a set value. For example, men of certain age, no matter whose value you donate, whether it be C.C. Sabathia, or whether it be Rav Moshe Feinstein, all men of certain ages, all, if you pledge that Aref, that value to the Beis Hamikdash, it's always the same value. All women of certain age groups all have the same value. It's a little bit humbling because no matter what we do in this world, it sends us back to the core of what our real net worth really is. So he's trying to explain this halacha called Erechin, and he goes around the classroom. He says, let's go around the classroom and everybody suggest what they think they are worth. So they're going up and down the rows, and everybody's saying, I think I'm worth this, I think I'm worth that. Towards the end of the session, Shlomi from the back of the room, he raises his hand and says, Reb, you didn't call on me. You didn't ask what I thought I was worth. And the truth is, Rabbi Luban's thinking in the back of his head, I know I didn't call on you. Because you sit in the back of the room, you don't really, there's never really anything positive that comes out of your mouth. He doesn't say this, he's thinking it. There's never really any strength. I just didn't want to embarrass you. I didn't even know it was going to come out of your mouth. He says, oh, Shlomi, you're right. What do you think? What do you think your value is worth? So something that he's never seen before, all of a sudden Shlomi's face lights up and says, my mother tells me every morning that there is nothing in the world that is more valuable than I am. We see in this week's Parsha, coming up, Parsha's Noach, and we know about the Mabul, and at the end of the Mabul, we're all familiar with Hashem making a promise, I will never destroy the world again. But if you look at the psukim right before that, that's leading up, it's not just that Hashem felt bad and therefore decided he wasn't going to destroy the world again. The pasuk says, "Va'yivan Noach mizbeach." Hashem, Noach comes out of the teva, he builds a mizbeach, he takes from all the kosher animals and all the kosher birds, he brings them as karbanos on the mizbeach. Va'yarech Hashem esreach and icholach, and Hashem smells the smell of the karbanos. And Hashem says to himself, Lo osif lekalel od es ha'adam abavur ha'adam, I am no longer going to destroy the world. And I said to myself, it seems, the way that psukim are broken up, pasuk chaf aleph in that paragraph, you can look it up during Parsha time. Vayarach Hashem esreach hanichoach vayomer Hashem elibo. It was triggered. The fact that Hashem decided he wasn't going to destroy the world was based on Noach's reach nichoach that he brought to Hashem. What was that reach nichoach? What was the sweet smell? And on top of everything else, why is it a smell? Now Hashem doesn't have any sense. So what does it mean Hashem smelled something? First of all, why didn't the Torah say, and Hashem saw what Noach did and then decided he wasn't going to destroy the world? There was a boy, he went to MTA. He was friends with my sister, so I knew him, my older sister, so I knew him a little bit as I was growing up. And he was a cool guy. He was really with it. He was a major entity, a major factor in the party scene. And he was, had all the girls whenever he wanted. And he was into sports. And he was the hero of a lot of guys in high school. And he was such a hero, in fact, that Camp Morashah decided that they didn't want to have him back. The influence was too powerful for not the positive ways. And they told him, he called up, can I have a job this summer? I don't know, maybe call us later. He got the message clearly that they're not interested. His father was a big rabbi in the community in New York. So his father made calls and they're like, listen, we love you dearly, but what he does to camp is intolerable. We can't have him back. So the father started calling around, and because he was prominent, He landed his kid a job in Camp Hask for the summer, which works with special children. The kid said to his father, like, Dad, listen, I know I need a job for the summer, but Camp Hask, that's not really me. You know, I'm a Morasha guy. I go to camp. I'm up on the stage, and I'm running the programs, and I'm hanging out with the girls, and I'm playing the sports. I've never worked with a special needs child my whole life. You know, that's not for me. He spoke to his Rebbe about it, and after a lot of convincing, he decided, okay, and it was his only option. They said, okay, I'm gonna go to Camp Hask. Gets to Camp Hask, and he has a camper. His name is Moshe. Moshe was low functioning, and he never smiled. And the guy decided, you know what? My goal for the summer is going to be, no matter what, I'm going to get Moshe to smile. Days off, I'm only going to take a half a day off. I'm going to make sure that Moshe, if I do nothing else this summer, I'm going to make sure Moshe smiles. How do you make a special needs person? You know, you don't even know what they accept from you or what they could hear from you. How do you make somebody like that smile? So he decided his strategy was going to be that he was going to walk around with a smile plastered on his face all day. It's not something that he regularly did. But he figured if he would walk around smiling all day, so this guy would, you know, this kid Moshe, he would be like, oh, I guess that's what you're supposed to do. And then by imitating, he would then smile. Day one, week one, kids, guys, MTA guys walking around like this with a big smile on his face. And people start, you know, the people, his contemporaries are like, you know, they're elbowing each other. Oh, look at the loser, you know, like, what's he doing? You know, I don't, what's going on? But he's like, no, I'm convinced this is my job. This is my job for the summer. Week one, week two, week three, nothing's happening. It's starting to get a little bit, he thought it was going to be really easy. What's the big deal? Let me just walk around smiling all day. And then all of a sudden, he starts staying up extra late, gets up extra early, doesn't take any free periods. He's working on this. He wants this to happen. He's walking around, you know, you wake up early, you start staying up late. All of a sudden, he's at Shacharis. All of a sudden, he starts going to Mincha. You know, that's what people were doing. Last day of camp, Moshe doesn't smile. Guy goes back to his bunk. He starts throwing things around the room, starts slamming the doors. Moshe is sitting in the room. Says to him, "What's wrong? What's, you know? Aren't you excited? You're gonna go back to, life. I had enough of you. I spent my whole 6 weeks. Everybody tells me, they walk around telling me I have a job to do with my life." You know, I decided to have, this is a good job, to make you smile. That would have been a serious job. And I tried 6 weeks, I'm trying to make you smile, and nothing happens. What a waste of time. What's the point of me being here? Kid says, change you. Because even though Moshe didn't smile, but what happened to that guy? He ended up, he now teaches in Rishon Yerushalayim. His name is Donnie Marcus. He's responsible for hundreds, if not thousands, of neshamas, teenage Jewish guys that went through that yeshiva to love Judaism and to love Torah and to love God. And he says about himself that that's what triggered the change. Because he made a kal v'chomer that if this guy, Moshe, he has special gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but if he could have such an impact on his life, Donnie says, that when he said change you, that by walking around smiling all day and all of a sudden committing to a job and realizing that I could get up earlier and I could go to sleep later and I don't have to take all the days off and I don't have to sleep and I don't have to have all that time off, if that guy could influence me in such a way, then he says it as, at the time I didn't realize I was making a kal v'chomer, but I was making a kal v'chomer, that, so how much more so can Donnie himself, how much more so could he impact the world? If you look at Rashi on Pasuk Chaf, Mikol HaBehema HaTahora, from all the animals that Noach brought on the Teva, he brought karbanos. Amar Noach said, Hashem could not have commanded or would not have commanded me to bring seven kosher animals onto the Teva. Ela kidei lahakrif karban mehem. Only, what's the reason why Hashem told me to bring kosher animals on the Teva? So that after the Mabul, I should bring karbanos. Noach looked at a situation. What did Hashem give me? What did Hashem tell me to do? Where did Hashem put me? And Noach said, oh, Hashem told me to bring animals on the teva. I'm going to use those animals for avodas Hashem. But Yarach Hashem esreach ani choach. Hashem smelled that. Hashem smelled that recognition. Hashem saw Noach looking at himself and saying, what does God want me to do? Hashem saw that, and then Hashem said to himself, Lo osif o lekalas ha'adama. I'm not going to destroy the world anymore. When man realizes what we're all about, when we realize what we have, when we realize what we could do, and we channel that for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Hashem says it's worth it for me to have the world, to have the world exist. Why smell? Why not sight? Why not Hashem heard what Noach decided? Hashem saw what Noach decided? Why did Hashem smell what Noach decided? Out of our five senses, when it comes to taste and touch, the only way that we register that interaction, the food touches our tongue and we have a taste. If I touch something, so then it registers in my mind a sensation that has... When it comes to hearing and seeing, in order to see something, I don't have to... Baruch Hashem, I don't have to... You don't have to go like this. You don't have to hold the book up to your eyes. It doesn't have to touch your eyes in order for you to see it. Or for you to hear something, I don't have to be right in your ear and scream in your ear and have my lips touch your ear in order for you to hear something. We see and we hear without contact. We touch and we taste only with contact. It's two and two. What about smell? So on the one hand, we think smell is like sight and hearing. You don't have to, when my wife makes challah, and I smell it all the way down the block, I don't have to hold that challah up to my nose and be like, oh, you know, and touch it. And then, so on first glance we think that it's like sight and hearing. But it's not really true. Science tells us that there are particles that are wafting through the air, that leave the challah, that leave the, you know, whatever Rabbi Berman's making upstairs in the dining room. It leaves that food, and when those particles enter our nose, that's when we have the sense of smell. It's very subtle. It's not, on the one hand, we would think it's not there, yet in reality, there is something there that's happening. A lot of times, you know, we look at ourselves like, you know, I'm really bright, so I know what I can do with my brightness. Or I'm really quick, I know what I can do with my speed. Or I'm really strong, I know what I can do with my strength. That is obvious. Those things we certainly should dedicate to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. But you know what the Chiddush is? Is when you have something like smell. Something about us that I don't readily recognize about myself that I'm really good at, or that's a talent or a strength. And all of a sudden I flesh that out and I make that something. That's Vayarach Hashem Esreach Nichoach. You want to know what's going to make Hashem decide not to destroy the world? What makes Hashem see that we recognize the gifts that He gave us? Not the blatant gifts, it's the hidden gifts. It's the things that we have to dig out of ourselves. The things that we need to search and find and learn and know that those are the things that I can do. That's Vayarach Hashem Esreach Nichoach. There's so many opportunities that are going to happen over the next 6 months. Some of them will be obvious. I'll go to morning shiur. I'll excel in morning shiur. I'll excel in night shiur. I'll excel in afternoon shiur. I'll come to davening. Some of them we know that we have to do. Some of them we know that we are able to do. But what about the things that we don't readily recognize that we could do? What about a little bit after Maariv? What about a little bit before Mincha during the break? What about a little bit before Shacharis? Vayarach Hashem Esreach Hanichoach. Those subtle ideas, that'll be the difference between somebody who will be great and somebody who will be average. For Shlomo Zalman Orbach, when he was growing up, so there was a new teacher in the school. And that year the teacher was teaching Hilchos Shabbos. And at the end of the year, all his friends were like, oh, the year's over, let's move on, we'll graduate to the next stage of life. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach decided, you know what, I'm going to stay back another year. I didn't feel like I really got it exactly the way that I had to get it. All his friends laughed at him. What are you doing? You know, it's like first grade. Well, let's move on. Come on, we'll go to second grade. Everybody's moving on. What are you staying back for? when everybody goes to the Shemir Shabbos Hilchasah and reads the footnotes of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and tries to get the details of his understanding of Hilchas Shabbos, nobody is laughing anymore about that decision that he made to stay back. There'll be the rest of your life to experience a whole load of things. But right now the opportunity is so great. Hashem gave Noach animals. He's like, I better bring in a carbon. Hashem put you in this building. Hashem put you in this environment. Hashem put you with these rebellion. There is something that you need to get out of it. The obvious, yeah, those we could do. What about the not so obvious? That'll be the reyach, the things that I don't readily see. That'll make the difference of somebody who will be great. We all are the most valuable thing in the whole world. But sometimes you could have a diamond, and you could have a gold, and you could have a lot of money, and you roll it around in the mud, and you hold it up, and people don't recognize the beauty. Same thing with us. We could be very valuable, but if I'm so busy hanging out at the burgers bar, and I'm so busy on Facebook, and I'm so busy on watching the little lights on Yahoo as the team gets into the red zone, and the little red thing goes on to let us know, if I'm so busy with that, is that going to make... I have a ton of years of sports fanaticism behind me, and none of that is anything that I hold up. Not that you shouldn't follow sports. The Giants should rock the Saints today. No, not that you shouldn't. You should. Not that I don't follow. But how much time are we committing? Is that something that's really going to make us great, or is that something that's just average? The reyach, the things that are not so subtle. Where am I going to invest in the? I could only urge you to listen to what Rav Boaz said on the first day. On the last day of the year, the number one statement that people make is, Rabbi, why didn't you tell me that this was going to go so fast? Now's the beginning. You think I have a whole year, I have plenty of time. Don't drop the ball. Start now. Let's start being great now, and we will realize that we really are the most valuable things in the whole world.